This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Kevin Fishbane.
I got Fishy Business, K. Fishbane.
Fishy Business?
Fishy Business, what I call him whenever I have him on the show, Fishy Business.
Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
I also always use the Arrested Development line, there's always money in the banana stand.
How much clearer can I say, there's always money in the banana stand?
Kevin Fishbane talking Bears.
Hey Kevin, Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic.
I love your name.
It's a great name.
Yeah, great name.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Brody and Weirer in today for Spiegel and Holmes. Spiegel will be back tomorrow, and I'll be in with Spiegel. Dan Weirer is here. He and I, we perform the Take the North podcast, all about the Chicago Bears, which makes this a very big moment for our next guest, as you heard, Kevin Fishbane, joining us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Fishbane, you are surrounded by the Take the North podcast and The Score. How are you, and how does that feel?
I'm honored, Grody. It's I'm humbled, without words. It's going to be a tough interview for you guys because it's hard to articulate what it's like to be among greatness when it comes to covering the Chicago Bears team.
Thank you, Kevin, for acknowledging that. I think that was an important start to this conversation, so I appreciate it, and we're appreciative of your breakthrough today on the big stage here with Grody and I. Did want to lead you into a question that we've been kind of ping-ponging back and forth here about Ben Johnson. We learned a lot about Ben Johnson as we were covering his hiring, but there's so much more to learn about his leadership, the Chicago Bears, and as you kind of start to chart that course with us next week in Indy at the Combine, what are the things about Ben Johnson, head coach, that you're most curious to learn about?
Yeah, I kind of want to know, I guess, in the Combine lens, Dan, I'm kind of curious, like, the type of players he gravitates to, whether that's skill set-wise, personality-wise. Like, every coach just wants great players. Like, I get that. You know, I'm sure he's like everybody else in that regard. But I'd be a little bit interested in terms of, you know, what he uses the combine for, what he tries to get out of interviews, what he wants to know from players. What, you know, are there certain heights and weights and speeds that he prefers? He might not divulge all that. But, you know, this is an opportunity for Ben Johnson to be extremely involved in the personnel acquisition period of the calendar, which starts with free agency and then the draft. And like, what's that role? What does that look like? I mean, we all know what Ben Johnson calling plays looks like. I think we all want to learn a little bit more about what Ben Johnson, you know, leading an entire organization looks like, but kind of the micro of like, what's he like as a, you know, I don't want to say a GM, but what's he like as somebody who's going to be right next to the GM making these decisions? What type of players stand out then? We learned that with Matt Eberflus, right? We learned, you know, guys who emulated hits and guys who, you know, didn't always work, right? But those were some of the things that Flus liked. I'm curious what type of players are going to be the ones that, that Ben Johnson gravitates to over the next couple months.
Yeah, and that guides me perfectly, Kevin, into the Bears draft. In the first round, they have the number 10 overall pick. Dan and I were kicking that around right at the very beginning, and I was suggesting that, you know, defensive player, where there is on the D line, D end, very strong in the draft this year. So while it feels like everything should be offensive line during this offseason, I would not rule out that possibility. And then all of a sudden, I looked at the mock draft that you and Adam Johns put together, and it's perfect because in round one, pick 10, you're going Mason Graham, the defensive tackle out of Michigan, and Johnsy is going offensive line, Will Campbell. So it's kind of a perfect split. I understand both, but what makes you say Mason Graham, and what makes you confident that he might still be there at 10 when the Bears do select?
Yeah, well, Grody, don't worry. I had plenty of people in the comments. Hey, you don't know what you're talking about. Mason Graham's not going to be
of
there.
Course.
By the time they get to 10. I got
of
a lot
course.
Of that. And, yes. You know, who? Nobody knows. We don't know. I think that what we know about Mason Graham, like, he seems to be one of those, like, really high floor guys that you just, he's just a, you know, as safe of a draft pick as you can get in the trenches. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to play out that scenario. If he's there, I feel like that's a no-brainer. You pair him with Jervon Dexter and Andrew Billings, and you have that. I always talk about the Eagles and just how they are able to come at you in waves. You know, like, so many different defensive linemen rotating through there. And, you know, even the Bears have talked about that, you know, wanting to create that, and they haven't. They just don't have enough guys there. They haven't hit on all the draft picks and free agent signings that they wanted to. So I like the idea of Mason Graham. And, you know, Grody, it's a great topic because I know your co-host Dan is a huge mock draft guy. And the thing, one of the fun things about this time of year is probably next mock draft, I might go offensive tackle. And then my third one, I might go edge rusher.
Right,
so that way we can kind of, and that way we can kind of lay out the different scenarios. But in this one, you know, I don't know if this is like my favorite one. That's why I want it. Like, I don't know if he's like my favorite prospect. That's why I led with it. But I just love the idea of getting that guy who's just going to wreck the interior for you.
I'm with you.
You know, and it's just, again, it seems like he's the type of prospect where if he's actually there at 10, that would be an easy call.
Grody, over the years, Kevin has been most successful in mock draft 16.0 when they go through the processes. It's 16th version of the mock draft is usually when he narrows
the
in
other
on
15
a little bit
covers
closer.
Ass, yeah.
Kev, I did want to ask you about the offensive line and what you believe should be sort of the pie in the sky reach for the Bears to try to accomplish this offseason before they get to training camp, and what's realistic on what they can get done in getting that front unit up shored up a little bit.
Yeah, well, let me throw this right back at you, Dan, because like, because I've heard this today that people are suddenly like down on Trey Smith because of Super Bowl.
I mean, that's hard to believe that one game would kill a guy's stock that significantly.
Yeah, and I bring that up because I think that the Bears are in position with their cap situation, with their needs. Like, go overpay for him.
Yep.
Like, why not? Like, I just think that, like, you know what he's been. You have the familiarity with Ryan Poles. Like,
he's 26 years old.
Go get him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, it just seems to make sense. Like, look, we all know that the greatest players in the game rarely hit free agency. So you're always going to have a question mark about somebody, like, when they're available. Why are they available? And I just think with him, like, you got the money, just go do it. And then you can continue to build. You can get another, you can add another free agent somewhere. You can build in the draft. I mean, this is the perfect, both lines, I think, are opportunities to double dip, where, you know, you get somebody in free agency to make you feel better about it. And then you add someone to draft. The biggest question to me about the offensive line, which the Bears aren't going to have really an answer for until he comes back in the building in April, is Braxton Jones. Like, I don't think you can just say, hey, we're good at left tackle. Like, I don't think they can do that. But, like, he is this kind of wild card because, I mean, he's an incredible, like, he's a good player. But then when you factor in the price tag on his position and what he's making, you know, it adds value to him. And I just don't know, and they won't know what his situation is going to be. And also, we don't know what Ben Johnson thinks of him and all that. But I think that's going to be an interesting thing to monitor Of course, look, if they go sign a left tackle, draft a left tackle, that probably answers your question. But I would be curious to see what Ben Johnson sees from him on tape and what they think, you know, he could be and how that plays a role. Because if you're worried about him, like, you could talk about this group needing four new starters.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, in the Braxton Jones thing, it is such a conundrum, because I would describe him as, when I put all the evaluation together, he's fine. You know what I mean? Like, he's
functional.
He's functional, which is not good, but that probably should not be enough at that position. Like, you can upgrade, and that's what the entire offensive line is like, except for, I think, Darnell Wright. I mean, I think that we're seeing a prospect develop at the right tackle position. But I think it's very difficult when people, oh yeah, Braxton Jones is actually really good, and PFF says he's good. But I mean, like, we see it, we know it, we know that that can be upgraded. Let me go around the room here really quickly with you guys. I want to go to the defensive line here and get the discussion going on whether it would be better to take care of your issues of pass rusher in the draft, or really what I want to talk about, and that's Myles Garrett, and how far you guys would go to get him, if you think you should get him at this age. Fishy Business, I'll start with you.
I think you have the conversation, Grody. I've certainly seen the charts about pass rusher production declining at a certain age. Now, you can make the argument that Myles Garrett is the exact type of player that could buck that trend and might be worth it. But I think you have the conversation because you know what he's capable of. I will say this. If you are willing to have the Myles Garrett conversation, then you really should have the Micah Parsons conversation because he's younger, a little bit more of a guy that you can put in a lot of different places. And he would obviously cost more because of those things. But I think if you're willing to go there for Garrett, I think you talk about it with Parsons. Again, I think you have these resources, you have these conversations. Your window is not 10 years. Your window is 2 to 3 years when you look at Caleb Williams and his contract situation and just the way NFL teams are. So I like the idea of having those conversations. It's hard for me to see any of that stuff really panning out. Because the Bears don't want to be in a position where they can't fix another spot on the D-line or mm-hmm. that offensive line because they gave, 29-year-old Myles Garrett X amount of dollars and gave up the draft pick for it. So I'm a little worried about that, but I do think, like, man, does this team need just a star? Like, they just don't have that game wrecker on either side of the football.
Grody, my concern is the price tag, and that's the price tag, first of all, of what you're going to have to pay in draft compensation. So I'm going to start with two ones that you're going to have to send out the door right away to get Myles Garrett, and then obviously he's under contract for two more seasons under his current deal, and you're going to have to figure out how that fits in your long-range building plans. The other part of this that gets overlooked sometimes is just because Myles Garrett wants out of Cleveland doesn't mean Cleveland's going to let Myles Garrett out. Sure. And so I don't know what the latest is out of there, because they understand how good of a football player he is, and they're not forced to make that move without getting what they want back in return. So what does that look like? I guess I'd throw it back at you both with this. Is the Bears did that a little bit with Khalil Mack in 2018, and they obviously got the immediate payoff, and 2018 was a magical year, but then nothing sustained after that. And so it's like, okay, was the loss of that draft capital worth that one magical run to the NFC North Championship?
That's such a great question, and I kind of think it was. I do. Like, the Bears got to the playoffs in 2018 in part because of Khalil Mack. Like, it's possible you don't make it there. It's such a great question, Fishbane. I would say, yeah, because it's football and things don't last long. And one year, one great year in the NFL is going to continue to be memorable as we're sitting here talking about it right now.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the Bears drop off after 2018, you know, look, Khalil Mack's own production drop off was part of it, but there were so many things that went wrong on offense. And you know, you had a defensive coordinator change, you had so many different things. So yeah, I don't sit here and say they shouldn't have made that Khalil Mack trade, because you said, Grody, they went 12-4. I just think that you take that, and there were things outside of Khalil Mack that led to that thing, you know, coming apart. But you know, and look, you can Well, people that listen to my Friday spot with the midday show know that I bring up 2018 a lot as the comparison to what they're going through right now. I mean, you got the GM hiring a second coach, an offensive going from a defensive guy to an offensive guy. You have the quarterback in his second year. You've got a ton of cap space. You have the draft capital. Like, there's a lot of similarities to 2018. And this is another one where they could be like, here's what I'll say this about any of these pass rushers, because you could talk about, you know, the guys out of Cincinnati, you got Crosby, maybe all these different guys. These guys are available in July, like Mack was. That brings the price down potentially. And then in July, the Bears have a much better sense of what they are and what they could be. And like Ryan Pace saw that team in late July and said, hey, I think we get Khalil Mack, we could be a playoff team. And he was right. Yep. So who knows? What if Ryan Pohl sits there in late July, one of these guys available, he's watched OTAs and training camp, he's like, yeah, we're in position to make this move.
Well, and this now brings me to Montez Sweat. And I want to know, again, from both of you guys, actually, what did Montez Sweat just have a bad year, or is the league on to him and he's like regressed back to his like earlier days, like where he would go away for a while? Where is it, injuries? And Weeder, I'll start with you on this one, then we'll go to Fishbane. Just give Fishbane a chance to catch his breath.
Yeah, he's got it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big moment, like I said, for him.
Yeah. I mean, look, it wasn't good enough this year for Montez Sweat, whether it's injuries or other factors or extra attention from opponents. They're paying you to be an every week difference maker, and within every week you need to make a difference in every quarter. So he's got to play at the level he played at in the second half of 2023 going forward to be the guy that the Bears think he can and should be. And so, yeah, I mean, that guy's going to have a bright spotlight on him when the season begins, because, again, when you sign that type of extension, there's a lot expected of you, and I don't care what's going on around you, within your body, whatever it is, you have to produce. That's the name of the game in this league.
Yeah, I agree with Dan, like I do often. And I do think that when you factor in, like, I want to give him a little bit of benefit of the doubt that he was not 100%. And, you know, there were a lot of double teams and a lot of chips. So we go back to Khalil Mack. We heard that a lot in 2019, 2020. A lot of excuses. And, you know, when you're the star, when you're making that much money, you've got to make a bigger impact. So this will be big for him. I'm not shutting the door on Montez Sweat. Like, I want to see how he responds this season.
Kev, back to something you said earlier about Ben Johnson and you know, what is he like, not necessarily as a GM, but right next to the GM. Do you believe that Ben's vision will supersede Ryan's vision as they go into this first, you know, off-season roster building cycle together when it comes to putting their heads together on what they need and where they're going to get it?
Man, Dan, it's a great question. You know, I love it if we got to be in the room with them when they do some of this stuff to see how those conversations really go. What we will hear is that there's a lot of really good collaboration and good synergy, and they're on the same page. But, I mean, look, I wonder if Ryan Poles is in a position to say, hey, I feel good about my ability to identify talent, but we hired this guy and paid him what we paid him to really take this team to the next level. And maybe there's a sense where he's able to lend some trust to, more so than he might a different head coach, to Johnson to make some of those, you know, to help make some of those decisions in a different way that he might have with a different head coach. So it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be a fascinating dynamic that unfortunately we won't really maybe get to know the true like setup of how it's going to work. But I think you have to, you know, lend way a little bit to the guy that you're paying what he's paying, and he has the resume on the offensive side of the ball that shows that he really knows what he's doing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that we're probably going to – my guess is that Ben Johnson will begin to impose his will a little bit more next year, because obviously he's not been had a scouting mind, I don't think. But, of course, Dan, I mean, that Fishman made a great point that's why he's being paid the money he's being paid.
Yeah.
It's unprecedented in a lot of ways for the Bears, so – do it differently, and doing it differently might be, let's listen to this head coach a little bit.
Listen to this head coach. That'll be a new segment for us on Take the North later in the week. Kev, can I get you to give your answer to the homework assignment we gave you, which is going to help us out in our next segment. We are going to go through all of Caleb Williams' performance from 2024, his rookie season, and try to identify the plays we love the most. We're going to give you the first crack at this. What was your favorite Caleb Williams play of his rookie season?
Okay, so you guys are familiar with the Olympic events, the hammer throw, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Fans of the hammer.
Big hammer throw.
They have a phrase, and this probably goes in some other events, which is last throw, best throw.
Oh.
And it's kind of a motivation for themselves because their last throw, you know, they have like 8 throws, and, you know, the longest throw they have is the one that counts. So they always want their last throw to be the best throw. With that amazing preamble, last throw. I think that, like, when you think about what that, from a physical standpoint, to make the throw to DJ Moore to set up the game-winning field goal, when you consider the situation, everything that team had gone through, where they were, what it meant to beat the Packers, you think about the quarterbacks before Caleb Williams just didn't make those throws, and him, for him to do it there, and then the mental aptitude to make the call at the line, to see what was going on, and to make the change and the route for DJ Moore. I think everything in that play is just what you want out of Caleb Williams as a quarterback. It was a big time moment by a big time player to end the losing streak, to end the losing streak against your rival, to make the play to DJ to set it all up. I think right there, last throw, best throw. When I think about his season.
Appreciate you taking the homework assignment very seriously.
Very
Kevin.
Seriously.
Thank you.
I love
Thank
that.
You. Yeah,
Kevin.
I also just picked the most recent throw, so the one that's fresh in my mind.
We'll be seeing you next week at the Combine. Yes, no funny stuff. Fishbane will be there.
Of course. Okay. You'll see me at that JW Starbucks.
Oh, yeah. The JW's lot of information gets taken care of there. And then the hallway.
Mm-hmm. Plural.
Yeah, hallway. Yeah, there are multiple hallways. Wait a minute. Which one of you two has been going to these combines longer? Which one? Hold on. How long have you been on the beat? Who's been on the beat longer? You guys come on the beat at the same time?
At the same season. I think Kevin was here. Am I correct, Kev? You started like 5 months before me. Am I correct?
About just 1 month. I got training camp in 2013, Bourbonnais. Some wild stories from Howe Hall. But, Dan's got more years in general. I mean, he is significantly older than me.
significantly.
And covered more combines and whatnot. But I've got him on the Bears beat by just about 4 or 5 weeks.
I think you're getting a little too comfortable here on this show, Kev. You don't need to be doing throwing those arms there. We're starting a new segment called Media Beef, and you might start one if you keep up with that.
Yeah, it's coming. Fishbane, thank you so much for jumping on with us. We appreciate it. And on a holiday, man, and we will see you at the Combine next week. And I think that the longer you guys are on the beat, there is a chance that George McCaskey will call on one of you two guys first one of these days if you guys just keep doing what you're doing.
My teammate Bigsy's not moving out of the way anytime soon, so I don't know that I'm going to be the senior member on the beat anytime soon.
It's a good goal, Grody. It's a good goal.
Yeah. Bye, Kevin. We'll talk to you later,
see
buddy.
You, Kev.
Take care, guys.
Yeah, see you. There goes Kevin Fishman. God, you guys came on the beat at the same time, huh?
It was a wild year. Pat Finley came on the beat that same year. Okay. Rich Campbell and I were hired on the same day. We had the very first same start day at the Tribune.
Yeah, was Haw too in that?
Haw
was there, right, when you got there?
We would roll in on a Bears game week. You know, it'd be Brad, David, myself, Rich, Fred Mitchell. I mean, like, there wasn't a story by, you know, from Monday to Friday that we weren't able to get to. Like, Matt Bowen was writing X's and O's for us. Molly was writing a weekly column for us.
All right, Fred Mitchell, how did this compare to the 84 Bears? We got you taken care of. Okay, who's next?
Your old teammate Rosenblum was in there, obviously, doing the shtick. And it was quite an army.
That's right. That you had, yes, Rosenblum was mowing people over and making life difficult for the reporters, probably.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it goes. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about Caleb Williams, and we're going to do our own little Caleb Williams draft of his best throws throughout the season. That is what we're going to bring you. Robbie the Tree Triana will join us for the next segment as well. We're talking Caleb Williams here on The Score.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. and it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa.
Okay.
See, we're in full service, 670 The Score station.
Afternoons on The Score.
There's no doubt Caleb played a large component into my decision. This offense will be calibrated with him in mind. We're going to build this thing. This is not simply a dropping of a previous playbook down on the table and starting there. Nope. We're ripping this thing down to the studs, and we're going to build it up with him first and foremost, and then with the pieces around him next.
Hey, that is Ben Johnson, the head coach of the Chicago Bears. I am Mark Grody, along with Dan Wiederer, as we collectively are in for the boys today. As Spiegel and Holmes get the day off today, and so we are here. We usually are, when Dan and I are together, we are called the Take the North podcast, which we suggest that you listen to. You can get it just about anywhere. But one of the things that we did on the podcast during the season, towards the end of the season, was to rank the 10 straight losses from from worst to first, from least worst to worst, I think is the way we posed it, right?
Painful episode.
It was a very painful episode. And as a make good to that episode, well, we've augmented a little bit. I think we did a segment on the 2018 Bears in the midst of the losing streak this year. I think we did that to clean the palate a little bit, made us feel better. But I think something we're going to do right now is we are going to make ourselves feel even better by talking about and doing a little draft here between the three of us of Caleb Williams's best throws of the year.
Yeah, best plays, best moments, best glimpses of potential, right? And so, like, when you look at what Ben Johnson is inheriting. You hear the words of the new head coach there saying how excited he is to get to work with Caleb Williams. The first place I'd start is to take this list of 10 plays that we're going to provide for Ben Johnson and watch those, right? And like just dig in to the highest level of potential that you see in this young quarterback and figure out what you can unlock. Those who follow me on social media and you as well, Mark, know that every game I went through every single passing play that Caleb Williams had and graded them with an emoji. Every single one of them got one of five emojis, the highest being a star, which meant it's a star power play. And so over the course of 17 starts in his rookie season, I counted 45 star power plays from Caleb Williams. That's a bit of a menu that we can use. You can go off script if you'd like.
Yes.
But Fishbane gave us the first choice in this group of 10 with the last throw of the year. He had to lead us in with some crazy hammer throw analogy there, but he did a nice job of finally making his point about that throw being significant as the way that Caleb Williams dropped the mic on the way out of his rookie season. And so what do you want to do here? How do you want to snake this draft? Which direction do you want to go?
I'm just glad that you weren't following the hammer drop thing either.
Okay, I'm going to go listen back to it later and see if I can follow it the second time.
The old wacky Fishbane with the hammer throw. All right, so we have the three of us here. Yeah, let's just go through it here. You know what? I will let Robbie Triana will go first. Dan, you can go second, and I will go third. And we'll discuss. Let's talk about Caleb Williams. Robbie Triana.
Love it.
What stands out to you, young sir?
So I don't know if this is the number one play, but this is the number one guy on my big board. I was at this game. I was there. Week 11 versus Green Bay. Obviously the game where Cairo Santos gets his field goal blocked at the end. But the 4th-and-3 play to Roma Dunze to set up that game-winning drive. I was there. It blew my mind in moment, and that was the first time I thought, you know what, Caleb Williams, he might have that killer instinct in him. He might have that ability to win games that Olin Krutz always talks about. The end of the game, Do you have that guy? That was the moment I was like, oh, damn. As a Lions fan, I was like, I'm actually scared of this man. So that is my play.
And that was the Packers game?
Yes. Against the Packers.
Yes. And that, by the way,
the quote-unquote game-winning drive and what turned out to be a loss.
The Carl Brooks block kick, Carl with a K. If you like that, I like to say that on the podcast all the time. But actually, that fits in perfectly because that was my number one worst loss of the season when we did the podcast. And I know there's some others would argue that to me, still out of all of them, and trust me, they're all neck and neck. The Packers loss at Soldier Field was the Bears' worst loss of the season. Mr. Wiederer, would you like to make your first pick?
I don't know why that sound effect just gets me kind of juiced up. I feel pretty excited about that.
I feel a little nervous too when I hear it.
I'm going to stay with the same theme of sort of that game on the line clutch gene, and I'm going to go 1 week later, still at Soldier Field against the Vikings. You guys remember the rally down the stretch of that game, and I'm going to take the last completion of regulation. It's that 27-yarder to DJ Moore to set up the game-tying field goal that forced overtime. Again, it was a loss in the end because the Bears couldn't get it done in overtime. But that play, Grody, you and I talked about it at the time. That was an absolute gotta-have-it play. And it was almost cartoonish with the velocity that Caleb put on that throw and the way DJ caught it. It looked like he was like blown backwards 5 yards when the ball hit him right in the hands and the chest. Big time moment. And it speaks to what Robbie just said a minute ago. When you've got a quarterback who has a hunger for those moments and can make plays in those moments, it gets you a little bit excited.
That was an awesome play. Yeah, 27-yard bullet to DJ Moore indeed to set up the game tying field goal at the time. See, the Bears were coming close. They ended up losing that game 30-27 in overtime. And I'm giving extra details on that because I'm going to stay in that game for my pick. Thank you, because there were some other elite throws in that game, and I am going to cite the first quarter throw to Keenan Allen 40 yards down the field, a drop in the bucket. Keenan Allen was surrounded by four defenders, and it had to be put in one place. And he put it in that place. So I assume you guys remember that particular play. You must, because we're all citing this game. But that play to Keenan Allen in the first quarter of the home game against Minnesota would be my first pick.
Fearless play. Cue it up, Ben Johnson.
My next play was starting the second round of picks. I always love the end of the game, that clutch killer moment, the Michael Jordan moment. I'm going to go to the next week after that Green Bay game that I've talked about, that week 12 against the Vikings. They end up losing that game, but it's 4th-and-4, and he has a 7-yard scramble in that game-winning, or not game-winning drive, but the drive to kind of keep them in the game, to stay alive. He gets the first down. To have that ability, that Patrick Mahomes ability, to kind of extend plays when you need it and the game on the line, those are the things that I take if you're a Bears fan and be like, we have this guy there. And right. That was a huge moment in that game.
That's what these moments are about, too. And I think that part, I hope that this helps people remember, and even me, because it was a rough year for Caleb Williams, but there were plays that he made this year that top quarterbacks make. I'm not going to say no other quarterback could have made, but top quarterbacks. Dan.
All right. I'm going to go a little bit off the path here and give you guys a play that didn't count.
Oh.
Miserable night, Thursday night in December at Soldier Field against the Seahawks. That was not a fun game to be at. It was not a fun game to watch. It was not a fun game to experience. Bears lose that one 6-3. But there's a 17-yard touchdown pass to Roma Dunze that was negated by a Jake Curran holding penalty. Can't get it out of my mind.
Yes.
From the minute I saw it from the press box, you see a guy rolling to his left and being able to put that type of velocity on a ball into the end zone to Roma Dunze for what should have been a touchdown. That's the type of special that Ben Johnson is going to want to get his hands on and mold. That was an unbelievable play, even though it went down in the books as a 10-yard penalty.
Do preseason games count in our little game here? I assume they don't. Okay, so I can't do
that. I was thinking the same thing.
That pass to Roma Dunze was sick. That was the only play that I was able to get Shane Waldron to admit was an elite play. Because, of course, we're hitting everybody over the head with that word. And Was that elite? And he goes, yeah. He goes, stepping out of the pocket and your blind side and flinging it down the field, that's elite stuff. So for whatever it's worth, ladies and gentlemen, Shane Waldron did refer to a play that Caleb Williams made as being elite. And same with Roma Dunze. Okay, if I can't do that, then I'm going to stay obsessed with that Minnesota game. I have not budged from the Minnesota game yet. And there was a 30-yard pass to DeAndre Swift in that game. Oh, yeah. Essentially a scramble drill. It was Caleb Williams first eluding pressure, then rolling to the sideline, flings it off balance on one foot down the sideline. A sick play to Swift. And Swift made a hell of a play on that one, too. Well, I remember talking to Caleb in one of those moments where I had a little one-on-one chat with Caleb, you know, no mic or anything like that, but on the record, and I asked him about those two plays, the drop in the bucket to Keenan and the 30-yarder to Swift, and I said, are either of those like elite plays? And he said the one that I just said to Swift, he was like, ah, nah. He's like, you know, I've done that before. Like, that felt comfortable. But he did say the one, the drop in the bucket to Keenan Allen. He said, yeah. He said, that was a pretty sweet pass.
I like the choice.
Yeah. Robbie the Tree, he's back.
It's your last pick, Robbie. Make it a good one.
Do I go with the bold one or do I go with the safe pick here? Do I go with the bold or the safe?
We want bold on this show.
I can't believe I'm saying this because there's no way that Ben Johnson ever wants him to do this again. And actually, Ben Johnson got a front row seat to this play. Caleb Williams did not call a timeout in that final play against the Lions game. And I say that for many reasons. There's a major butterfly effect to this one decision Caleb Williams did not make. Matt Eberflus, what if they win? Does Matt Eberflus stay? How long does he stay for? Is there a chance that Matt Eberflus earns a job after that? Probably not. Probably not. But you look at the Lions side of things. If they lose that game, they probably don't get the number one seed and win the NFC North. What if the butterfly effect? They don't lose to the Commanders. They beat the Eagles. They win a Super Bowl.
Whoa.
Would the Bears have hold on to be like, you know what, we're going to get Ben Johnson? Or do they get cold feet and hire somebody else? So that play was a major moment in Bears history right there.
Wow, man, that was thorough, man. Well done, Robbie the Tree, ladies and gentlemen.
Outside the box thinking.
Oh, yeah, see?
But Ben Johnson, do not let him do that again.
That's why I wanted that one. Yep.
All right, I need the sound effect for my last pick. There it is. Oh, yeah, it's so good. I'm going to another day that we would rather not revisit often, but it was in October, and it was in Maryland against the Commanders. That Bears made a valiant fourth quarter comeback, and they were in position to move to 5-2. And one of the reasons they made a valiant fourth quarter comeback is because of the fourth quarter play of Caleb Williams. Once again, this is game on the line stuff from Caleb Williams as he brings them back. Remember the 27-yarder? deep down the left sideline to DJ Moore.
Oh, yeah.
DJ ended up getting hurt on it. And DJ not only got hurt on it, he was on the sideline looking on as that drive ended with a Doug Kramer fumble at the goal line.
God.
But it was a big-time throw and a big-time moment from Caleb Williams. He obviously had to get the ball back one more time, lead a go-ahead touchdown drive in what should have been a game-winning moment. There were some moments in that game in Washington that forecast that this kid is big enough to meet those fourth-quarter game-on-the-line clutch moments. That throw to DJ, you could play that on a loop for 45 minutes if you're Ben Johnson and feel real good about what you have to work with.
As tough as the chemistry seemed this year between Caleb and DJ Moore at times, those two did hook up for some spectacular moments this year, for sure. Did we do the 25-yard jet motion play action deep shot left to Komet in quarter three of the Green Bay game? The Komet play? Did we get
it's
to,
all yours.
I'm sorry. I prematurely gave it to you, probably because we have to take a break, but that's where I land. How many did we leave out? Is there any miscellaneous? Oh, there's many, many, many throws that we did not get.
35
to.
Star power throws that we did. Actually 36 because Tree went off script with his. So yeah, like there's more to dig in, but we got a break and we'll come back with more.
This is what podcasts are for. So maybe we'll continue this conversation at some point in time on the Take the North podcast. He is Dan Wiederer. I am Mark Grody. We are today the Spiegel and Holmes Show on the Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
It's LeVar Ball.
What's good? Triple B, big baller staff. You guys go do your thing. I love your staff.
Afternoons on the Score.
Fourth and three. Game on the line. Williams lofting one for a dude.
Was that the one that got called back?
No.
Oh, that was
that's the A-plus one against Green Bay, the first game, the Carl Brooks game. You know whose voice that was calling that an A-plus throw? That was Tommy Brady.
Oh.
Tommy Brady doesn't give out A-pluses very often.
A-plus Tom.
Yeah.
Poor Tom. Didn't get Ben Johnson. Sorry about that, Tom.
Tom's going to do all right for us.
Mark Grody, Dan Wiederer in here today for Spiegel and Holmes on the Score. And we just did our Caleb Williams great plays draft. And now we move into the territory of what we might be expecting or what we should expect out of Caleb Williams next year. Because there are many reasons why things were unsuccessful at times that were out of his hands. Quarterback going into his second year, obviously, Dan, you give him the whole year, just like you gave Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields 2 years. But something's got to start looking right in the first half of this season.
It's got to start looking right as soon as they get together in the building in April. And I think that's some of what you heard from Ben Johnson during his introductory press conference and the conversations that followed, is that he's really eager to get with Caleb Williams for a very long, extended period of time so they can start seeing things through each other's eyes, right? I think that's such a key component of this as Ben Johnson does what he promises to do, which is tear this offense down to the studs and build it around the talents and the wants and the skill set of Caleb Williams. That takes time on task, and those two guys are going to have to build a relationship really quickly and really productively.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. And I do wonder, I mean, we're all assuming that the offensive line is going to get fixed and it's going to be better and it's going to be more compatible for what Caleb wants to do out there. But what do you think that they will do in terms of, you know, I'm kind of, you know, that I've said on the Take the North podcast that I am for pro. I would love it if Keenan Allen would come back for the comfort of Caleb Williams. But I do understand that it's probably not realistic. Or have you changed at all? Because I know you were kind of like,
I haven't. Yeah. I mean, you've got two top-tier receivers in your arsenal already. You need to use some of your resources elsewhere to build this team into a champion. You can find receivers on day two, day three of the draft and make them into serviceable number threes.
You're ready to call Rome Odunze? He's it?
I mean, he's a top 10 pick, yeah, right? Like, I'm not saying he's arrived, but he better be,
better
right?
Be.
Like,
gotcha.
he better be. This is a guy that you spent premium draft capital on, and he showed a good amount during his rookie season amidst all of the turmoil that we've talked about for everybody to give you a great optimism that he's going to take a big leap forward with Ben Johnson as well. So, I would expect Keenan Allen elsewhere, and then we'll see how they build out the rest of that receiving core.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I do hope that like the proverbial light turns on at some point. Not that it wasn't like this was a bad year for Caleb Williams, but let's be honest, it did feel disappointing. Some of it is relative to Jaden Daniels and what he was able to accomplish. Like, that's what you wanted to see in your quarterback. But I do think that there was enough stuff that was out of, again, I said it a million, you had the wrong coaching staff
right
for this quarterback. And I'm kind of hanging on to that because, believe it or not, Caleb, although probably struggled even more than I thought he would this past year, nothing has made me change my thoughts that I think that Caleb Williams could still be a great quarterback.
Correct. At the same time, it takes a tremendous amount of investment, and I think your ears perked up the way my ears perked up at the Ben Johnson introductory press conference when Ryan Poles said, we are going to challenge Caleb Williams to be a professional football player, right? You're going to teach him how to be a professional football player. We're going to ask him to do the little things right. That was some pretty important subtext from the general manager who lived through some of the bumpiness of 2024. There's an ownership piece to this, to Caleb Williams, and that starts as soon as it can start for him in understanding what is going to be asked of him, not only by this coaching staff, but by this league, right? Like, this position demands a lot of you, and you better be ready to do all the things that this league asks you to do. That's setting protections. That's understanding how to make pre-snap adjustments. It's, you know, learning how to call a play in a way that's efficient and gets you to the line of scrimmage with more time. There's a lot that comes with playing this position, and you've heard enough people from that building talk about Caleb taking steps up in that regard that it's worth us keeping an eye on.
Yeah, it is. And we've been kind of been sniffing this out towards, I don't know, middle, towards end of the season. And I know that there was that whole big blow up where there were reports that some players may have been more comfortable with maybe, the veteran quarterback stepping in and playing as opposed to Caleb. But I think a lot of that was debunked. But it was something to keep in mind in terms of Caleb Williams' command of the locker room. And like you said, Dan, his part in this.
Yeah, and understanding the duties, you know, and that it's a full-time job, you know, and you got to get in early and stay late and absorb that week's game plan and know everything that's asked of you and the 10 other guys on your offense to make things hum the way that they're supposed to hum. I will say this, like, we have these conversations about the rookies from this last year, and there was Jaden Daniels, and there was Drake May, and there was Bo Nix, and, like, you know, Bo Nix got together with Sean Payton, yeah, right? And, like, had a pretty good rookie season because he was with a guy who understood what it takes to set his quarterback up for success. And so you see that, and that is actually encouraging to me more than discouraging to me, because Ben Johnson seems like he's got enough offensive aptitude and prowess as a play caller to be able to set his guys up for success. And so you're like, okay, if that union between Bo Nix and Sean Payton could elevate as quickly as it did, similar things could happen here for sure.
I'd like to think that you're absolutely right on that. All right, we're going to take a bit of a Bears break, but we will return to Bears talk later. Coming up next, we are going to, let's be honest here, we're going to scratch the itch of Dan Wiederer, U of I guy, Illinois alum. We're going to talk to Jeremy Werner in Champaign about Illini buckets, everything that is going on. Upside down honors there, yikes, a big injury for the Illini, and a rough loss. So we've got much to discuss about the Illini and college basketball coming up next on The Score.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.